I'm going to try something that I have never tried in a sermon before. I've done it in a classroom, but never in a sermon in church. It's called a bibliodrama. Let me tell you what that is not. From the name of it, it sounds like I'm going to ask people to get up and act out a story, and that's not what I'm going to have you do, although I suspect there are some of you who would like to do that, who probably prefer to do that. But what a bibliodrama is this. I'm going to retell the story of Jacob and Esau, and hopefully tell it in such a way that all of the human dynamics and the conflicts of those relationships come out. And then at the end, I'm going to ask you the question, where do you see yourself in that story? In other words, out of your own experience of life, how does that experience illuminate this particular story for you? What is the meaning that you see in it? And then if there are any of you who are bold enough, and I suspect in this crowd there will be, I'll actually hand out the cordless mic and let you answer that question. Where do you see yourself in this story? But the story that we just heard is a story about sibling rivalry. And I think that's something that all of us know something about, either because we had brothers or sisters at home and fought with them, or if we didn't have brothers or sisters, if we were an only child, we still are in relationships in which we have rivalry with fellow workers, with parents, with colleagues, with friends. So rivalry, and especially sibling rivalry, is something we all know about. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I began this series that I'm calling The Conflicted Saints of Genesis by looking at the first generation of the patriarchal families, Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael and Isaac. And if you remember all of the jealousy that Sarah felt toward Hagar and the way that jealousy played itself out in the story and the awful things that happened and the resentment that exists to this day, the book of Genesis is filled with very human people. And we find that again in this story from the next generation. It starts with Isaac, who is Abraham's son, who is married to a woman named Rebecca, and like Abraham and Sarah, they had trouble getting pregnant. And so Isaac prayed to God, and then Rebecca became pregnant, and she was with twins. And it says in the story that the two twin boys who were growing in her womb fought together. I don't know whether that's literally true. Maybe later on in life, after she experienced how these two brothers fought and how fiercely they fought, and she remembered the difficult pregnancy that she had, maybe she said they were fighting together before they were even born. You can understand where that story comes from. But it was like they were fighting together inside her womb, struggling to be in the position to be born first, because in the world, in the ancient world, the birthright was a really big deal. It wasn't just a Jewish law. It was a law of all peoples across the ancient world and even today. The firstborn son in a family would become the leader of the family, and the next generation would become the recipient of most of the father's estate and have the position of honor in the next generation, the honor and power that the firstborn would have. So Esau and Jacob struggled before they were born so that, you know, for the honor, for the power of being born first. And Esau won that struggle, but Jacob was born holding on to Esau's heel, which is why they named him Jacob, which is a play on the Hebrew word for heel. And this only began the lifelong conflict that these two brothers had. You know, they were twins, not identical twins, because they looked different, but they were twins. They grew up in the same family, but they were as different as two people can possibly be. Now, Esau was big and strong and powerful, and he was covered with thick red hair. He liked to be outdoors. He liked to hunt. He liked to work in the field. He was a physical person who was in touch with his bodily hungers, whereas Jacob was probably the archetypical 97-pound weakling. scrawny little kid, didn't like playing outside, but he had a sharp mind. He had a sharp and shrewd mind that he was always using to get the best of his brother Esau. But the thing that he really wanted was Esau's birthright, because he couldn't stand the fact that when their father died, that he would be ruled by this slightly dumb and slightly inarticulate brother of his. Now, Esau was not the brightest light in the chandelier. Jacob was. And Jacob used his superior intellectual prowess to try to get the best of his brother Esau, because he couldn't do it physically. And so he kept waiting for the opportunity. The opportunity came up one day when Esau had been out in the fields. He had been working, hunting, planting, harvesting, whatever he was doing. And Jacob had stayed at home cooking. Now, he was a chef. He was making lentil stew, soaking the lentil beans all night and then cooking them over a slow fire and adding the spices he knew to add. And when Esau came home for lunch, he was absolutely famished. And he saw the stew on the stove, and he heard how the translation put it. He said to Jacob, "Give me some of that red stuff to gulp down." This is how bright and articulate he is. And Jacob immediately pounced on the opportunity. He said, "Well, if you give me your birthright, I'll give you all the stew you want." And he said, "Birthright? What good is a birthright to me? I'm hungry. Give me some food." And Jacob said, "Swear on it first." In other words, get it signed, sealed, and notarized. I want this to be a legal transaction. And so the legal transaction was made, and Esau traded his birthright for a bowl of lentil soup or stew. And then he went back out into the fields and went back to work, probably unaware of the long-term consequences of what he had done, because Esau was just somebody who was very present. He knew his bodily needs. He knew what he wanted right here and now, but he was not a person who could think strategically, who could think long-term like Jacob could. So this is the story of the sibling rivalry as it began between these two brothers, Jacob and Esau. And the question that I asked is, where do you see yourself in this story? In your own experience of life, in your own conflicts in your family and among your friends, how do you see, what wisdom do you see in this story, or what truth do you see in this story that your particular experience opens your eyes to? Let me share how I connect to this story, and then I'll give any of you who would like the chance to do that as well. I think in some ways I'm a little bit like Esau and a little bit like Jacob. No, I'm not the big, strong, husky, physical guy like Esau was. I'm more the in-the-head intellectual sort that Jacob was. And so I'm more like Jacob in that sense. But there's one sense in which I relate very much to Esau. I am the oldest child in my family. And my family lives in Washington, D.C., and my family owns businesses in Washington, D.C. And it was always everybody's expectation, especially my dad's expectation, that when I grew up, I would take over for him and I would run the family business. That was what was expected of me because I was the firstborn. That was my birthright. But I gave up my birthright. I spurned it, because I knew from an early age that I had no interest in running a business. And when I graduated from college, I went to seminary. And then I was ordained and I went into the ministry and then I went into teaching. I have no interest in running a family business. I spurned the birthright, and my brothers today are doing the very lucrative job that I could have been doing. I don't feel like I've given up anything. I'm doing what my path in life leads me to want to do. So that's how I see myself in this story. Wonder if any of you who would like to share a thought, you know, time permitting, where do you see yourself in this story of Jacob and Esau? Bruce.
I see myself also as Jacob. I had one brother older than I. He was a schizophrenic, and I felt I always had to live down the reputation that he laid out before me in school. I had to prove to people that I am not like him. And that was a continuous struggle that I had in high school, and so I made sure that I went to a different college from him.
Anybody else? Wild Bill.
My mom died about 2 weeks ago, and I'm the oldest of 9 children, and there's 7 of us still alive, and I have 5 younger brothers that are nothing but Neanderthals. And when so in a way, I kind of feel like Jacob, even though I was the oldest. I was much more articulate. I'm the only one that was gay in my family. The rest of them continued to like to work out outdoor labor. They're cement contractors or different kinds of outdoor construction type work they all do. And when my mom died, it was a big, we were all there in the room. And my mother waited until my last brother showed up before she died. And we had waited for 2 days, and I have one brother that's a drug addict, and he showed up and was only there for 15 minutes. And then within just a few minutes after he showed up, my mother died. And it just came to show that we were all equal in my mother's eyes. But after my mom died, the kids started screaming and yelling at one another, and who is the favorite, and who is this, and who is that, and it became really awful. The memorial service, my brothers wouldn't talk to me for 3 or 4 days before the memorial service. They said, you're always the one that makes all the decisions, so we're going to make the decisions. It became a big, big rivalry. And we had quoted, when my mother died, I quoted Psalms 23. And Wesley United Methodist is the one that did the service for us. And she talked about Psalms 23. And when my brothers showed up, half of them wore badges with my mother's picture on it, not telling me what they were wearing the badges. And it was a rivalry all the way until the very end of the service. But at the end, they told me that I came through like a big brother. And I just wanted to share that about sibling rivalry, because I'm just getting over it with my mother. And I'm just not sure where I fit in there. I know that I'm real articulate like Jacob, but I was always the oldest. And when it came to who was going to say what, my mother always, it was always up to me to be the one to make all the final decisions. And that's the way it ended up.
Life has its messy moments, doesn't it? Anybody else?